Hi, everyone. This is Gary Barkalow, and this is another Noble Heart podcast with Susie Larson. Over the last several months, I have been doing radio interviews about the book It's Your Call, and there was one interview that turned into a second interview because it was so enjoyable. It was one of those interviews where I didn't want the time to end. We were just enjoying each other. There was, at least on my heart, there was no thought that there was an audience. It was just enjoying ourselves, talking about calling, what we have learned, what we've come to believe about it, our working with others in this. That radio interview was with Susie Larson, who we're talking to now. And so I asked her if we could just get on the phone and just record this and talk further. Just a real quick background for you. She is the host of Live the Promise radio show, which is on the Faith Radio Network. She has also written currently six books and is working on her seventh. So, Susie, I'm looking forward to this time. I've just really enjoyed you, your passion, what you have learned, and not just learned, but what you have gone through and taken into your heart in a profound, deep way.
Gary, great to be with you. You nailed it. We felt exactly the same way as did my producer during that interview. We both said, we've got to get him back. And so it was a definite sweet spot, I think, a matching of passion. So it's great to be with you again.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, so let me jump right in. You and I had talked earlier about two things that weigh heavy on your heart as you think about calling, as you go around the country and you speak and you run into people and you talk to people. So why don't you just jump into those two points?
Sure. Well, when you asked me, you know, if there's a direction I wanted to go in regard to talking about calling, the two things that come up for me a lot as a women's conference speaker traveling around, you know, one is the ambition. Because we live in a Western culture where there's much wealth, and even in Christianity, there's a lot of making a name for myself under the guise of Christianity, that really scares me, because for me, my calling evolved out of the ashes of my pain. I'm under no illusion why I get to do what I do, and it was because God rolled up his sleeve and pulled me out of the worst, desperate, most painful place in my life, and he put a new song in my heart. And so even those doors opened up and I got published and my speaking platform grew and got a radio show, all those things. I had, you know, people coming up going, how did you get this stuff to happen? And I would see the stars in their eyes, and I would try to explain to them what it means to lean in and be refined and to abide in the vine. 99% of the people that start to hear that testimony walk away going, yeah, I just want to do what you do. I mean, I want the prize, but I don't want the process, you know. And so there's a real burden in my heart for people to know. I love what you say. In fact, I've quoted you so many times about that our call is so closely linked with that deep desire of our hearts. I mean, that just, to me, shows the love of God right there. And it was a relief for me to even hear you say that. It was so good for me. And I've carried that around. And yet I do believe that every person has that, as you say. But I think many abandon their call in that valley of refinement because they would rather come out with their flesh intact than their dream intact. And there's something of us that has to die to our rights, our need to be noticed, our personal ambitions, for God's dream to really live in us. And it's not an easy process, but it is so worth it on the other side. So those would be the two things for sure.
Oh, that's so good. And so how would you differentiate, how would you explain the difference between, let's say, selfish ambition, Scripture talks about, and ambition, just the desire to develop something to its fullest in your life so you could offer to others versus selfish ambition?
Well, I think symptoms of self-ambition are envy, pride, jealousy, competition, comparison. Now hear me right about the competition piece. I am an athlete at heart, even though I'm in my late 40s. If I get on a bike ride with my husband, I'm out to win, even if it's a fun ride. You know what I mean? I have that in me, okay?
Uh-huh.
But I'm talking about looking at other ministries as the competition, about peering over their shoulder and being jealous of the way God is using them. That is all about us. Now there still might be something in us that I want to be someone whose ministry he expands. But those things, when they come onto the lordship of Jesus Christ, and you do that, you go through the refining place that he brings every one of us through, suddenly the goal is that needs get met, whether it's through me, whether it's through you. There's plenty of work out there. Jesus says, pray that you'd raise up, that I would raise up laborers for the harvest, because the workers are so few and the need is so great. And so when the focus shifts where it's like, I get to be a part of the bigger voice. I get to be a part of the bigger story, but I'm just one voice. You know,
yeah.
This isn't about me building my kingdom. It's advancing his kingdom. And I think that those are the two differences. And I think every one of us, because we have a dream in our heart and a tendency towards our flesh, to put our weight into our flesh, we'll have that. I mean, it's going to be mixed up. And for me, there, you know, it was a major refining period of a valley time where first God put the dream in my heart. Then he let me have a little bit of a taste of it to see that this is something I could do. This is sort of a sweet spot for me. And then all the opportunities sort of dried up, and I went into this valley of preparation, and I watched everybody else, you know, gleefully skip off into their callings, and it brought up all my stuff, and that was so good, because the Lord was like showing me this is the stuff, he showed me though in his love, Gary, that I only want to extract this from you, the very things that the enemy would want to use against you. If I leave this intact, all your self stuff, and let you go on and do the things I want to do through you, those will be access points for the enemy. He will be able to hook you. He will be able to bait you. And so this is my love, extracting this stuff from you so as much as possible you can walk this out with a pure heart. And so for me, I once started to embrace and lean into that process, I never wanted to leave that place. I was like, I don't care if I do anything except live in your presence. And that's what he was after, was this intimate love affair. And so, you know, I basically came out of that valley leaning on the arms of my beloved, as it says, and I think in Hosea. And from that point, now I have to tell you, I just don't deal with status as far as when I see people of status, it does nothing. It doesn't even affect me, and it's like dead to me, because when I esteem highly, it's that humble, God-fearing servant. If I meet someone like that, which I see that in you, Gary, then I'm like, you know, I'm a like-minded person with that person, and I can see the gift of God in them. But for, you know, I might say, I have to be honest, you know, there might be times when I start to get some momentum, I'm tempted to look down and become self-aware, but it really is more like a black dot on a big white screen that rather than a whole picture of
right.
myself. Do you know what
right.
I'm saying?
Oh, so I do. Yep. And I've seen in my years as well, knowing people and traveling and bumping into people and observing, it just seems like so many individuals or organizations start off innocent, right, pure. And it really does start with a person. An organization doesn't have its own life. It's a person in the organization of influence. But then a shift takes place. And language starts to change a little bit. It's not us. It's me. It's those kind of things, that slight shift. And I remember Henry Nouwen talking about the idea that we have to be careful of this power thing when all of a sudden what we do and what we say is to be noticed, to be seen as a player, to be seen as brilliant. And, boy, when I read that, those words that he used, I thought, I can taste every one of those. That's familiar
mm-hmm.
to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I've had to go to some of my close friends, a few here and a few around the country, and just say to them, I'm asking you to watch me carefully. Listen to my tone of voice. Listen to the words I use. And if you ever sense a shift going on where it's now becoming about me, and for some reason everything seems to point my direction, please say something. Because I'm convinced some of these people that I've watched this happen to, they were completely unaware of it. Now, I think some of them might have been aware, but I think it started unaware, and then it turned into something that took over. And I'm very afraid of that as well. In fact, you know, one time I had a friend come over to our house, and from another state, happened to be visiting someone, and we had spent the morning together talking and having a great time. And at the end, he said, you know, I'd love to pray for you and Lee. And I said, so she came in, and we said, we'd love this. And then he went off, and he said, I can't believe what a privilege it is to sit in your house. And I said, wait, what do you mean? And he goes, well, to sit with the Barkalos, you know, for a day in their house, I mean, who gets to do that? And I said,
yeah.
We are no different than you, absolutely mm-hmm. no different. You think I'm more busy? I'm not. I don't care any more than you. We are the same. And so, mm-hmm. and that's the
and
thing.
You do me no favors by talking to me like that.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
Yeah, well, we have such an uncanny ability to shift weight onto, you know, he's the vine, we're the branches, but it seems like when we grow something good, we dangle from it. You know, we forget to keep our arms and legs wrapped around the vine. And
yeah.
I don't remember what writer it was, but a writer from the 1800s said, you know, true wisdom is to have a certain mistrust of self. And I just think that's really true, that, you know, to keep a short account and to surround yourself with people who can speak into your life and, you know, smack you upside the head if you need it. And I've got people in my life as well who would be right in my face in a minute. And that's just insurance for me because, you know, raising my sons, they're grown now, but we always said one of the most insidious attitudes you could ever embrace is pride. That's what got Satan kicked out of heaven. And if you ever think that you're more than you are, you're everything to him, but you're nothing without him. And so if you ever for a minute think you're better than someone else, you've believed the biggest lie, and it'll be your greatest downfall. And I just, pride's scary to me. And so anyway, that's where I'm coming from. And I think you're right when you look at ministries, when the weight gets shifted over to my big accomplishment and how great we are, and we've got the corner on something here, and we develop our own lingo and whatever, way scary. And then you think of these persecuted churches in third world countries. They are just as concerned for us because they see how we've dangled on our own branch. So.
Yeah. Okay, so Susan, let me ask you a question I was asked today on a radio interview, and it was a fascinating question. And the question was something like this. If God says that his strength is perfected in our weakness, and yet it seems like in our calling we're bringing this strength that God has given us to others, how do you reconcile those?
That's a fabulous question, first of all. And the first thought that comes to my mind, my pastor has this diagram that I use often, and I think I might have used it on our show together when we were on with you. But if you picture a circle, and inside the circle is the known zone, and that's your comfort zone. And, you know, we're kings and queens of our comfort zones. We're a big deal in there because we know our way around. Then you add another circle around that circle, and that's the learning zone. And you step out of your comfort zone to learn. Suddenly you're off balance. And so let's say you're a corporate giant, but you hit going to the mission field, and suddenly you're not such a big deal. Or maybe you're, you know, a literary genius, but you go into an aerobic class and you suddenly see, well, I'm not such a big deal here. You know what I'm saying? And so we go into that learning zone and you're a little off balance. And then, but the thing is, if you stay and accommodate your comforts and your fears and your strengths, even in the known zone actually shrinks. And that's just biblically and scientifically proven. If you accommodate where you're comfortable and only live there, even what you know, you lose. But if you step out into that learning zone and subject yourself to that learning and trusting God and letting yourself be put in positions where, you know, he must increase, you know, suddenly, eventually that learning zone becomes more of your known zone, and your known zone increases. Well, the next circle is the faith zone, and we cannot please him without faith. And I think when we are living in faith, because we can't please him without faith, I think we live so far beneath our means, spiritually speaking. But when we step out into those places, we are weak. And so he will use our strengths to glorify his name. But I think that if we just camp on our strengths and coddle those things, and we are not willing to subject ourselves to stepping into places that maybe aren't comfortable for us, that we really are, you know, in over our heads, that is where, you know, my weakness is so real. And when something happens, I can only point to God. It's like, there's just no way this would happen if it wouldn't have been him. Nobody can do the math and say, yeah, I can see why that came out of her. And to me, I guess, my weaknesses are most exposed when I'm stepping out of my self-protection, my need to self-preserve, and following him to places where if he doesn't come through, I am done. And so that would be my long answer. What do you think?
I think that's a great answer. Where were you when I needed you?
Yeah.
You know what? That is a fascinating answer. That's a lot to think about. It really goes with what you were saying, that when I'm operating in what God has given me, it's truly me. It's not artificial. I haven't made it up. I'm not trying to impress. It's just what God has given me to offer to others. And of course, I try to deepen in that because I love it. I'm fascinated by it. I know it's what I want to offer to others. It does become a strength, but I think when we're in our real strength, we are also aware of our weakness in that. We're aware of what we don't know. We're aware of what we can't do. And yes, could we persuade others in a shallow way that we're experts? Yeah, probably. But deep inside, I'm just real aware of, I don't really know what to do here. And if God doesn't show up, what I have really won't be that helpful. And one place I really feel that, and I just got a couple days alone with God here last week, but on this particular one, one of the things that I sense God was saying, Gary, you are avoiding this because you are afraid of it. It's risky. And that is, when I'm talking to individuals, is to just stop and pray with them and listen to God together. That's real risky for me. Because so many times when I'm talking to a person, they'll say, so Gary, what'd you hear? And I feel all the pressure in the world that I've got to have something. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, so as soon as I heard that from God, I knew he was right because, well, one, because he is.
Yeah.
number two, it was my internal reality. And I thought, I know, I run from that. And so that is an area of weakness for me because it's fear. It's not faith-based. It's fear-based. And yet, I do know when I'm saying, well, let's just see if God wants to say something to you or to me about you, that he almost always comes through in that. But that is where I feel my weakness and his strength, that be an example of that.
It seems like we're saying the same thing because
yeah.
It's, you know, it's like as we operate in our strengths to go into that learning zone, like if we're willing, God will expose areas that we still don't know something about. To me, it's like pursuing further education or even, you know, getting ready to sell your house to move into another house. You have people coming in and inspecting your house or inspecting your financial records. Suddenly there's inventory looking for weak spots. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And so
mm-hmm.
people who never move from one house to another or never step up and pursue further education really don't expose themselves to areas of need, of areas of growth. And so, and that's why I think people live in that comfort zone because they're too afraid. And so to follow God into these places of the unknown zone, basically, and trust him, that's when we find him strong. And so you miss out on the adventure of your life if you're all about self-preservation and saving face. You miss out on so much, you know.
And staying for a minute on the topic, and then I want to go to the next one that you brought up, but the topic of this kind of pride that comes in and selfish ambition and arrogance. What I find is when I'm pretty persistent spending time with God, listening, reading scripture, letting my heart speak, like questions come up, it does seem like God will address areas in my life that's starting to turn into pride. You know, that, boy, you really thought you could handle this, Gary, and so on. And it never feels condemning. It just feels like a father asking me questions about how I'm really
mm-hmm.
doing.
Mm-hmm.
But what I find is when I don't spend that time, that's when I seem to go off in my own thoughts and I'm really vulnerable to going through situations that some go very well and then drawing my own conclusions versus God just coming back and saying, let's speak to that and what's going on in your heart right now about who you are and who I am and where I was in this. I think there's a safeguard if we just walk with God, spend time with him. I think he'll speak to us, but I think in isolation we are so vulnerable to pride and arrogance.
I couldn't agree more, and I can't imagine trying to even step out without having some of your feet on the ground, you know, with the Lord. And I think that is so dangerous. And you hear that often where when someone experiences success in their ministry, where they'll get running so hard, the very thing that grounded them, the very thing that opened those doors, you know, is the thing that they lose touch with. And I don't remember if it was, I think it was Tommy Tenney, reading a quote from him a long time ago, he says, the Father could finance your journey away from his heart. In other words, as you walk and step with him, and he will bless you, that could be the very thing that finances your journey away from his heart.
Mm.
And so we really do need to know how to steward that and keep the main things the main things. It's like, I can accomplish that if I hang on to him, but if I have to let go of him to do that, then I guess it's not for me to do. And you're right, without constant, consistent time with him, we'll be relying on our own understanding. We'll be impressed with our own wisdom, all the things the Bible tells us not to do.
Yeah. So one, you talked about this idea of not becoming self-reliant. The other was the idea of being tested and trained.
Mm-hmm.
So talk more about that.
Well, you know, again, I'm going off of my personal experience, but this, you know, speaking and talking to lots of women and hearing from lots of women and just being in the business, talking to other authors and speakers, you know, the ones where I see great fruit coming out of their lives and I'll ask them these questions about calling and about process and training, every one of them consistently has been through some kind of painful breaking period where they came to an understanding where God was saying, I'm God and well, you're not. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this training time, I think it was Beth Moore who said, you know, we can't escape the fire, but we can determine whether we'll let it refine us or not. Because we, you know, we can come through the fire and still smell like smoke. We can come through, you know, times of refining and discipline and get an attitude and get bitter or whatever and miss the whole point. Or we can come through it without smelling like smoke, where we can be trained, where God can allow a delay. Now, I use as an example Joseph. His life in the Old Testament speaks volumes to me. Here's a young man who had a promise written over his life, And then it seemed like everything that happened to him screamed otherwise. And yet, you know, the Bible doesn't really record that he came up with any kind of attitude. He stewarded well his space, his spot, and rose to the surface, rose to the top in every situation. And then when here he's in prison and he interprets a dream, so God uses some of his gift, and it looks like this could be the breakthrough. And the guy goes out and forgets to mention Joseph. I mean, of all the, you know, lousy things, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But God used that even in my valley of preparation, where he would use me and he would say, you know, just so you know, I see you, I know you, and I have gifts and I'm going to operate through you. But I was looking around going, but nobody saw. And, you know, and so it's like instead of embracing the idea that God just did something really great and I blessed another person, the right people didn't see, and nobody's validating my gifts, and I'm still sitting here in this valley. But all of those things brought up ambition, brought up my need to get ahead of God as if I had a better grasp on my timetable than he did. And so for me, it's like he let me be used. He used me. He let me see, yep, there's some gifts here. But he very clearly whispered to my heart, Gary, now we're going into a valley of preparation. And I still didn't like it. I went in kicking and screaming. Because, I mean, he brought people in my past, and these are all little tests, and everybody's valley looks different. But I had this woman come into my pathway. Here, I wanted to write books. I self-published my first book. I wanted to speak. My speaking events dried up. And she was someone who, quite honestly, I thought was a very shallow person. And she ran wild, ran crazy as far as how she managed her life and schedule and didn't have much spiritual depth. It's hard for me to admit it, but I'll just say it straight. So there, she's not someone I would ever go to for spiritual advice, but she comes in front of me and she says, guess what? You know, there's a couple publishers interested in a book. I never even wanted to write a book. And she was just spewing all these things of all my dreams. And I wrote it in one of my books. It was like I was the sailor called out to sea, but I was, you know, stationed to the beach to pick up everybody's garbage, and her sails flapping in my face.
Uh-huh.
You know, and she's going gleefully out to sea going, I never wanted to do any of this, and it's all happening for me. And I, you know, and I'm telling you what, it brought up so much frustration. I'm like, Lord, she doesn't even spend time with you. She's shallow, whatever. I got home, and I asked God forgiveness. I'm so sorry. I judged her in that way. And the Lord spoke to my heart, and he said, If the closest you get to writing and speaking is to pray for her success, will you do that for me? And I said, I'll have to get back to you. I just couldn't answer it right away. And I wrestled for 3 days. I'm telling you what, I wrestled and wrestled. And I finally got to the point where I'm like, I love your presence more than I love my life. And it will be hard for me, and it won't be pretty, I'm sure. But yes, Lord, I'll do that. And so I started to pray very, very hard for her success, that God would bless her and convict her to have time with him and give more fruit to her ministry. And that went on for a few months. And then at the grace to pray, that just lifted. And then the Lord, the winds just shifted. And it's like he lifted that assignment from me. I knew it was a test of my heart. And then doors just started to open up. But I'm telling you, it wasn't a pretty time. And people were telling me in that time, you're completely naive to think speaking events are going to just come to you. You need to mail out flyers. You need to do this. You need to do that. Mm-hmm. And every time I would go to the Lord, he'd say, nope, you're not going to do it that way. And I'm not saying that's cookie cutter for everybody, but I knew for me it would have been disobedience trying to crank something out. And so it's so amazing to me is those people that told me I was so naive for not willing to do this and that are the very ones afterwards when the wind started to shift are running going, how are you getting this stuff to happen? And I could clearly before God say, I've done nothing except wait on the Lord. The Bible says he blesses those who wait on him. He works for those who wait on him. You humble yourself before his hand, in due time he will lift you up. That's the only thing I can point to. I've done nothing different except wait on him and let him deal with me and clean my character up. And so that is my testimony. And like I said, the people that I run into in the industry, whom I deeply respect, will have a very similar story, though it may look a little different.
Mm-hmm. Do you find, as you do talk to people, whether it's on your radio show or just personally interacting or while you're traveling, do you find that there are certain kind of common, frequent fires that people have to go through? Would you say, well, I can name 3 things that probably everybody's going to go through because I've seen it, or not? Do you see a pattern there of what those
typically look like? In a brushing stroke, that's a really great question. I think in one one thing that I just noticed that I've seen again and again is it's kind of like Joseph, where God will move in and speak and give you a taste of your call, and then he backs up, and it seems like, I thought we were dancing here. I open my eyes and you're gone. You know what I mean? Where, you know, it's like, and the opportunities sort of dry up, and there's a season where things pull back. The grace lifts, or not the grace lifts, but I mean the opportunities pull back. But you got the energy. You're ready to run. And he's like, well, right here. And that I've seen again and again. And it's like, what will you do with that? Do you trust him enough to wait on him? You know, and you look at, you know, Moses in the Old Testament, or Abraham and David, you know, these men knew how, I'm not moving without him. Can we do that? Do we have the self-restraint to do that or not? And again, living in this wonderful country, we have access to making almost anything happen if we want it. And you will have people who tell you you're naive if you're feeling called to wait, and they say, you know, if it's to be, it's up to me. So that would be one thing for sure. And betrayal from other people, that's another very big thing, is people misassigning your motives, misreading you, or they put you on a pedestal and they have stars in their eyes and they want to be, and then they get near you and realize, you know. But, I mean, they get disappointed in your humanity, and then they become your worst enemy and stab you in the back and gossip about you. That happened to me, and I've talked to many, many people who that's just been desperately painful. And then, you know, there's the health issues and those kinds of things that are just that create a dependence on God. But those are some of the things that I've seen.
Each one, I mean, I didn't have an answer in my mind to that question I was asking you, but each one you mentioned, I can just say yes to the waiting. And so many times if I'm talking to somebody and they're so discouraged because they're so ready, I want to do something for them so badly, but one, I would have no idea what to do. And secondly, I stepped in too many times to be God in somebody's life, and it's not only turned out bad for them, but terrible for me. So, yes, that's a huge one, this whole idea of timing and seasons. And the betrayal one, oh, my goodness. I've run into so many people that have been betrayed, and especially by somebody of spiritual status in their life, whether it's personal, just a friend. But usually the deepest ones are believers. So it could be a believing friend. It could be a believing relative. It could be a pastor. It could be a Christian organization. And I see so many people, I mean, down on the ground and paralyzed because of that, and find out they have been for 30 years because of that incident. And then, yes, the other one, the, you know, physical ailment and that type of thing. And it just feels like, you know, why me? Why am I the exception of the grace of God? And why is this so hard? And see, one thing that I've found out over the years is that because I hear so many people's stories, it's partly what I do, and it's a clue into a person's calling in their life. So I hear hundreds upon hundreds of stories in depth in these calling intensives that I do. And you just realize that, you know what, we're all not that different from each other. We always think we've had the harder life. God is less generous with us. He's more distant. You know, like you said, the wind always blows into their sails but not mine. But, boy, when you hear people's stories and they're honest with you, you realize, you know, everybody's in a battle for their life. Everybody's struggling. God is there for everyone, and no one has a pass on this one as far as shortcuts and ease. It's just a great, you know, perspective evener when you hear other people's stories. And, of course, they're honest about their stories.
Right. And all those things. You talk about someone being stuck on the floor for 30 years. That's what I even mean about that valley of preparation.
Mm-hmm.
Because it might be, the battle might be seem totally unrelated to your call. But if you get paralyzed by it, or you get so, you won't give up your right to see them pay. All those things can disqualify you from, to me, the highest level of your call. I mean, I think that we walk it out in different degrees, but I really believe that the majority of Christians who die and go to heaven are going to say, I never even accessed a portion of what you made available to me. I believe that, and I have such a passion to see God's people mobilized into the fullness of their call, and I think that's why we connect so much, Gary. But I really think that in that valley of preparation, whatever it is, God knows the stuff in us. But we have a right, you know, to forgive or not to forgive, as far as we are the bosses of our body, and we can. He's not going to forgive for us someone else. We have to do that. We have to renew our minds. We have to lean into the discipline of God. And so when I had some of these painful betrayal things happen to me, they were so devastating. You know, I couldn't get off the floor either. And then I finally thought, you know, well, what in me, Lord, are you after here? You know, what in me are you getting at? And I started to have a high standard around gossip, and I wrote The Uncommon Woman about that issue. And so every time that there was pain, Lord showed me how to leverage it for the greater good of the body of Christ and turn the tables on the enemy, so to speak, to say, okay, this is what you intended for evil, but now I'm going to make you sorry you ever messed with me, because I'm going to plant some seeds and I'm going to walk this baby out. And but what's so hard is you see certain people stuck in that valley going, I'll never get over it. And they do think that they're the only one who's gone through that. And that's what I see on the other side. Those who are bearing the most fruit somehow reconciled their pain, entrusted their betrayers to God. You know, I mean, all those things in that place of preparation, they came out the other side rich indeed. And so that's my whole point, is that when we hear calling, sometimes people get this illusion that I'm just going to go dancing frolicky and it's always going to be fun. But I think it's a brutal battle, but it's one worth fighting, and it's totally a winnable one. But that's just the reality to me, is we are refined, we're prepared, because he trains our hands for battle. If your calling is really from the Lord, which it is, it's going to be about bettering the kingdom, advancing God's purposes, you know, helping the lives of others. And that is ground that will be opposed, you know. It's like, right, we're not going to take ground and not have opposition. And so we've got to know how to contend with the things that contend with us. And there's times where humble yourself under the mighty hand. Other times, rise up, put your shield up. We have to know how to do that. And so that is my passion, Gary, is just to see people entrust themselves in the refining place and learn how to stand, learn when to bow, and then we become forces to reckon with. I don't believe that.
Hearing your passion, you've articulated it well. Your passion just comes through in your voice, your enthusiasm. So now I want to back up for a minute from where you are today and ask you some kind of discovery questions, okay? So how you've discovered what you have. So let me ask you this. What are your favorite movies or stories?
Well, off the top of my head, Facing the Giants and the Sandra Bullock one. Oh, my goodness, Blindside.
Blindside.
Those are probably two of my favorite movies, yeah.
I mean, not surprising with the two themes you've talked about, you know, of you've got a battle to fight, you need to be trained, you can do this, it's not going to be easy, but it will be glorious. And
yeah.
And this idea of not making this about yourself, becoming selfish, becoming small in that way.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Any others you think of offhand besides those two?
You know, another one I just saw recently that has not left me for some reason is The Boy in the Striped Pajamas. I don't know if you've seen that one.
You know, I haven't, but either you mentioned it on a phone call that we did together, or someone did, because I'd never heard of it before.
Yeah, you know, I got it for $5 at Target, so I'd heard about it again and again, and it's a boy, a very wealthy boy of a soldier, a high-ranking soldier. They get moved to this place by a concentration camp, and so he thinks one of the little boys on the other side of the fence is just at camp in his striped pajamas, and he keeps befriending him and doesn't understand what's really, really going on, and not to give it all away, but he ends up crawling under the fence to be with his friend, because his friend couldn't find his dad, who'd been gassed, and so he wants to be his friend and help him find his dad. And I'm giving it away, so spoiler alert here. But anyway, he ends up dying in the concentration camp. But it, you know, I have a real heart for human traffic victims and injustice, and those are on my heart and on my prayers all the time. And so it really just impacted me so much about the discrepancy between the haves and the have-nots. And yeah, and maybe that is real consistent again with the other two, but it impacted me deeply.
Yeah, no, I think it is consistent. And so let me ask another question. What are some of your favorite words? There are certain words you like to use all the time.
Wow, that's a great question. I think the first ones that come to me, which will make you laugh probably too, but tenacity and courage and faith, those probably are the three that are before me all the time.
Yeah.
You know, nothing's come easy to me, Gary. And so, you know, I can see at every turn, again,
yep,
how the enemy would have loved to have taken me out. And so, yeah, those are words that definitely are big in me.
Yeah, and I'm sure I could go back on this recording, and if I take note, I could find all those words, like the ones you mentioned and some others that I've heard you use again and again, mm-hmm, because it reflects the passion of your heart. Mm-hmm. You know, and the funny thing, Susie, is I'm thinking there are people that could get an initial glance at your life and understand you're speaking and around the country and you're hosting a radio show and writing these books and say, like you said earlier, gosh, I wish I had an easy, blessed life like her. Mm-hmm. And they have no idea of what you had to go through, the fires you went through, mm-hmm, to be able to do what you're doing now. you know, it wasn't self-made, it wasn't self-created, and it certainly didn't fall in your lap.
Right. Exactly.
And that misunderstanding, cause that's what I find, is when people don't know another person's story and they only see the present and they only see what's visible, they draw conclusions about the grace of God, the favor of God in a person's life, and they think, well, if God would bless me, my life would look like theirs right now. But
Absolutely.
They don't stop to say, tell me your life story, and they think, oh, my goodness, I can't believe you went through those things to get here.
Right.
You know.
And then when they do hear that, so many say, well, you know, I'm so glad I'm not you. You know what I mean?
Right, exactly.
So, but others, you know, what's interesting is when I'm at these writers' conferences, almost always a publisher friend or an editor agent will bring a young person over and say, you know, you've got quite a platform and she wants to do what you do with the multiplicity of the, you know, the three things. Tell her how you've built it. And I'm telling you what, again, 99.9% of the time, they're disappointed in what I have to say, because I don't have slick marketing tools, and you know, and so, you know, there's that perception on both sides that I'm either mm-hmm. self-made or I just sort of walked into it one day, you know, and neither are true, you know.
Yeah. Well, okay. So, Susie, any other thoughts that you want to throw out there before we end this? Because this has been rich, it's been great, but just anything else that you're thinking that if we hung up the phone, you'd say, oh, gosh, I wish I had said this as well.
Well, I think the thing that's on my heart, and the reason I'm so glad you're out there doing what you're doing, is I do feel the urgency of the times. And something I notice in the body of Christ that really alarms me is passivity that people will interpret for meekness or humility, and it's mm-hmm. opposite. To me, humility is harnessed strength, you know, where passivity is self-protection. To me, it's like choosing to be comfortable now at a great cost later. And so I really do feel a burden for how many believers take an easy way and self-protect. And I think you kind of stir up the pot a little bit by the questions you ask. And so I really do pray God's great blessing on your ministry, and I think it's so incredibly important. So that would probably be my last word, is if someone's listening now and they find themselves relentlessly self-protecting, always staying in that comfortable place, opting to not let their voice be heard, as if that's humility, that's coming out of a lie to me. That's not coming out of a truth, out of a fullness of God. And there's a time not to speak. There's a time to watch someone's feet. But that comes out always knowing who you are. And in your knowing, you bow down.
So, Susie, I know there's going to be people that are hearing this going, gosh, I'm fascinated with her, with how she thinks and how she writes. And so would you do me a favor? I know you probably would rather not do this, but I'm asking you as a favor. Would you mention the books you've written, and then can they find these anywhere? And what about, I know you do a blog. How would they find that? How can they get the resources that God's put on your heart to give to others?
I write a devotional blog every Wednesday, and you can access that through my website, SusieLarson.com, and that's where my books are listed, too. And the first book I ever wrote, I actually self-published, and it's just a two-hour quick read, and it's called Mercy in the Wilderness. It tells our story, and I've had more than five men tell me that they read it in one sitting on the toilet, so I thought I should add that. Too much information, but
yeah. Anyway.
But that's just a sweet story of our time and me finding God in those desperate places. Next book was Balance That Works When Life Doesn't, Simple Steps to a Woman's Physical Spiritual Health. And I was in the fitness industry for a long time, and so I parallel a woman's physical and spiritual health. And basically, those are the first two disciplines to go in a woman's life. And then she overcommits and falls out of balance. So this is just asking to put a few hours, you know, a week into these two areas so that you can last long and finish strong. And it takes you kind of from the shallows to the depths in how you care for those two areas of your life. Next one is called Alone in Marriage, Encouragement for the Times When It's All Up to You. And that book is not a how-to marriage book. It's really for the woman who's carrying the weight, who's in a season of one-sidedness with her marriage. And basically anybody who's married any length of time, if they're honest. You know, life ebbs and flows, and so does marriage. And there are seasons where the woman is carrying the weight because maybe the husband's in seminary, or he's in sin, or he's got a selfish hobby, or he's a workaholic, or he's military. Or it might not be a negative thing. It might be a positive thing. But either way, I interviewed lots of women, and I found that the same things come up for women. It's anger. It's loneliness. It's disappointment. insecurity, these kinds of things. And so this book is to lead women to a more intimate place with God, regardless of the reason that they're in the one-sided season. It's kind of like we're going to deal with what it's doing in you. And so, and then the next one is The Uncommon Woman, and that's probably my signature book, Book of My Heart, and that's a woman's call, really, to know her identity and to break the mold of the stereotypical woman behavior so that we can move on to the more noble things that God has called us to. I love that book. And Embracing Your Freedom, its subtitle is A Personal Experience in God's Heart for Justice, and this is all about getting your land back. And the thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy, but Jesus says, I come that you have life and life abundantly. And I know for me and for us as women, it's like every hard thing that happens, it's like the enemy tears away at a part of our land, and pretty soon we're living from this little small place, making rules around our insecurities and fears. And this is about getting the land back, but I also parallel the captivity of human traffic victims. So it's really mostly about you as the reader getting your land back, but throughout the journey you're going to learn about the reality of literally captive young girls and that God cares about them as much as he cares about you. So it's like hopefully to help you develop a heart for a bigger story, but to get some feistiness in your faith to take back the land the enemy's stolen from you. And then Growing Grateful Kids, the subtitle is Teaching Them to Appreciate Extraordinary God in Ordinary Places. I was just at Focus on the Family with that book. And that really is about imparting humility and gratitude in our kids. But my whole point is you can't impart what you don't possess. And so it really deals with you as the mom as you are seeking to impart such things to your kids. So I think that's all of them. I think I have
Susie, that's great. I am so impressed that you have written all those books because I've, you know, just from writing one over 10 years, I know, you know, writing is a difficult thing. It's not easy.
Yeah.
And, but I, so one, it's almost unbelievable you've written that much, but on the other hand, it's completely believable because I see this abundance in your heart from walking with God and what you know. So I'm so glad you've done all that. So Susie,
thank you
for this conversation.